Hello, listeners. Yamina here. Welcome to the Dr. GPCR podcast. We are grateful to you for being such amazing listeners. Thank you for your continuous support. While we record new podcast episodes with your favorite GPCR scientists, let's spend some time revisiting previous episodes as we enter the end of 2023 and we start a brand new year. We wish you and your families happy holidays and a wonderful new year. We're currently working on the Dr. GPCR University to provide you courses and content on all aspects of GPCR research to support our community. Our first course will be held live on Zoom starting February 8, 2024, by none other than Dr. Terry Kinnakin. For more details, including the registration information, the specific dates, and topics covered, go to the ecosystem at drgpcr.com/ecosystem. Spots are limited to 20 participants, and if you decide to join us, you'll get a one-year complimentary Dr. GPCR ecosystem membership. Become a Dr. GPCR ecosystem member and enjoy rewatching all the Dr. GPCR recorded talks during the summit and the symposium. You'll also get access to the video casts of our podcast, and soon you'll have access to a great collection of Dr. GPCR University courses. You can also message members privately, network with your community worldwide. We now have launched a monthly payment option for your premium membership. Renew your Dr. GPCR membership for 2024 with a more comfortable option. Are you looking to hire? Are you looking for a job? We've got you covered. Contact our Dr. GPCR chief matchmaker, Mark Schmeisel, to help you either hire the ideal candidate for your company or help you find your next job. I sat down and spoke with Mark directly in episode 55 of the Dr. GPCR podcast. If you'd like to get to know him better, go and re-listen to this podcast episode. You can also reach out to Mark at drgpcr.com/jobs. And now let's dive into this episode. Hello, everyone. This is Yamina. Excited today to have with me Dr. Shivani Sachdev. Hi, Shivani. I'm so excited to have you on the podcast today.
Hi, Yamina. Thanks for having me.
I'm super excited. It's been a long time. We've been like postponing this because of conflict, but we're finally here. here today, and it's so good to see you. So how about we start at the beginning? Why don't you please introduce yourself to the audience?
I'm Shivani. I am doing postdoc at NIDDK, National Institutes of Health, located in Bethesda, Maryland. And we are working on nanobody ligand conjugates to target GPCRs. I think which is why I'm here, because we're all contributing to GPCR field somehow. That's it about me.
Perfect, perfect. But why don't we give the audience a little bit of background, because you and I have known each other for quite some time now. And full disclosure, I think I talked about it in episode 99 of the podcast. But when I started Dr. GPCR, I was looking for help and you were our first ever Dr. GPCR volunteer in 2020.
That's
and
true.
I don't know how you remember it, but I do remember having kind of a phone call or a Zoom call for the first time, and I was sitting in my car parked in front of the
I do remember.
So how did you get to where you are today, and what were you doing in 2020?
So 2020 was when I submitted my thesis. It was in early January. I had no idea that COVID is gonna hit everyone. But I submitted my thesis. So I did my PhD in Australia. And then I was like, I need to go and spend time with family. So I'm so glad. I think I took the last flight from Australia to India. And after that, there were like no flights, because I think during that time, COVID was everywhere. But I think when I was finishing my thesis, I was hearing things that China is under lockdown, but we were not sure like how things are outside China, right? So then I came to India to spend time with my family, and we were together in lockdown. And that's, I think it was during that lockdown period that I contacted you, because I heard the Dr. GPCR podcast, I'm not quite sure when was the first podcast released, but I think it was sometimes in May. And I kind of remember that maybe I heard the podcast with Dr. Brian Roth. Was it during that time? I have a feeling that
No,
maybe.
I think it was before that. So the first podcast was indeed released in May, and it was with Paul
It was
Insel.
Paul Insel.
Yeah. And
No,
in
I now
July,
remember. Yeah.
I recorded the
Yeah.
podcast with Brian, and that also was in my car, which, based on
Yeah.
his
Okay.
assessment, that was the size of his first lab as well, which I thought he was hilarious.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think I got in touch with you when I heard the first podcast, and I saw like this Dr. GPCR community on Twitter, and I was like, wow, this is so cool. Like, this is such an innovative idea to get everyone working in working in GPCR field under one umbrella.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, I am just so glad that I got to be part of Dr. GPCR community, and I'm still, but I'm glad that I could help in the small way that I did, you know? Yeah.
Thank you. And it was a tremendous amount of help. And for those of you who don't know, Shivani, I think you spent a year and a half, maybe 2 years with Dr. GPCR. And
Yeah.
you were the one behind all the papers collected and categorized for the first 1,000 papers, at least. So thank you for that. All the readers who clicked on a
Course.
monthly basis and all the papers, that was pretty much you. And as I was mentioning before we hit record, we were doing it kind of manually at the time. And I think without you, it would have
Yeah.
been so much more difficult, if not impossible. So very grateful to having you on board. And I think you were even with us on the second summit, so 2021 as well. So yeah, it was a
Yeah.
good
Yeah.
year and a half, 2 years.
Yeah, good run for those 2 years. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I
you
mean,
mentioned.
I also enjoyed making that newsletter because it helped me keep updated with the latest research in the GPCR field. And I remember like we would discuss like how there's just too many cryo structures these days. When you go back like maybe 6 or 7 years back, things were so different.
Yeah.
It was just it just I felt grateful to be like contributing to the Dr. GPCR. I mean like disseminating like the research that has been happening, because it's so hard to keep yourself updated with the GPCR biology papers, because there's just too much these days, right? There's so much, it's just hard,
Yeah,
you know?
yeah.
So I think Dr. GPCR somehow really helps to like, just click in the newsletter and just go through the papers. And you can see everything that's published, and it's like categorized as well, depending on the signaling, activation, cryo-EM structure,
Yeah.
etc. So yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, and I think I th and now we kind of what I was mentioning also, we kind of reduced it to having it on a weekly basis. And every week there's anywhere between 10 to 30 papers. And I think to myself, oh my God, 30 papers? That's a lot of
Wow.
research happening on a weekly basis. But I
Yeah.
think it's really fun. But how about we talk a little bit about how did you get into studying PhD, excuse me, GPCRs? Because you mentioned you were finishing up your PhD in 2020 and
Yeah.
you left Australia at the right time before we went into lockdown, but when did you first hear about GPCRs and how did you get into being a GPCR person?
So I think it all started when I was maybe 7 or 8 years old in school, and one of the teachers said that you would lead the world if you study biotechnology, right? And as a kid, that thing got stuck with me. And I would just think, oh my God, like here at my home, I have no say at anything. like, you know, your parents make decision for you.
Yeah.
But just to have an idea that, oh my God, you could lead the world and you have to study biotech for that. I'll be like, yes, I would love to do biotech. So that's how, and I just stuck with the idea of studying biotech throughout like high school and everything. And when it was the time when we had to make the decision of like what school I would go to, and what would I do? I said I would study biotechnology because I just love everything about science. And my parents said that, why don't you do medicine? And I said, I don't think I have the heart to do medicine. I think you have to be like I don't think as a person I could do medicine because I think I'll be too emotionally occupied into, you know, I just don't have it, what it takes to be a doctor, a medical doctor, I meant. So that's when I decided that I would want to do and they agreed with me. It was nice of them to just agree with me. So I did undergrad in India in biotechnology. And while I was doing biotechnology, I realized that there are two things that I really like. One was pharmacology, another was immunology. So I knew that I wanted to do PhD, and I knew that it would be in either of these two fields. But then the question came up that, where do I want to do PhD from? Like, would I want to do PhD in India or like go overseas? And I started talking to people, and I figured that PhD in India could take maybe about 6 to 7 years. At that time when I finished my undergrad, which was around 2015, I think. And at that time, like now I know that 5 years is not a lot, but at that time, 5 years, I was like, oh my God, that's so long, you know, that's how my brain was thinking. And I was like, no, I can't, like, I don't know if I would be able to do like this long PhD. So I was like, okay, let's Google which country would provide your PhD within 3 or 4 years. And that's what I did. And it showed Australia and New Zealand and like Germany, etc. So I was like, oh my God, this is cool. So it is possible to get your PhD within 3 years or 4 years. I was like, I was like, no, I want to do a PhD. And then I started looking up different labs, mostly pharmacology. And I would send them emails. I'll go through their website, look a little bit about what those PIs are doing, look at the lab and everything, and then I'll customize, tailor my email according to the research, according to their research, and I'll send them emails. And that's how I met Professor Mark Connor. He's like he's a professor in pharmacology at Macquarie University in Sydney, Australia. He supported me completely, and I wrote the application and I did my master of research in Macquarie University in Australia. I was fortunate enough to get the full scholarship. And when I completed my master of research, that's how I got into PhD. Because that was one of the criteria to get into the PhD. That's how it happened for me. Going back to your question, I heard about PhDs first, I think it was during my undergrad, but I felt that it was during my undergrad, but I did not know so much about GPCRs then. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I wasn't paying enough attention in the class. I don't know. But when I started doing my master's, that's when I was like, I was working on cannabinoid receptors, which is the most abundant GPCR in the brain. So that's how I fall in love with GPCRs. That's how it happened. Yeah.
That's amazing. And which gets, actually, you made a lot of points, and I want to kind of explore a couple of those. One, you mentioned that I'll have questions too, but one, you mentioned that you when you figured out that you don't want to spend 5 years, five more than 5 years in a PhD. So that led you to looking up websites to figure out where is the shortest PhD being done. And also the point that I want to make is that you took the time to investigate scientists in those universities and in those countries that interested you, and you tailored the email to the research that these people were doing. And this is a very important point to call out because it is very critical. No matter what you do, when you send out an email to anyone, you need to be knowledgeable about what they're doing. And you did great because you did the research. My question in this context, how many responses do you like? How many email, how many people did you contact, and what was the response rate?
I think there were like a couple of days I would just sit and send emails. So I don't have a count of exactly how many emails did I send, but maybe it was around 50, or maybe more than 50. I actually don't know. I get respond back from Montreal, from someone in Montreal, someone in Germany, like a professor who was in the field of immunology in New Zealand, and then there were like a bunch of people in the field of pharmacology. So out of 50, I would say maybe 10 people would have responded to me, and like a positive response where they were like inclined to talk to me about it, while others were like, we do not have a position in our lab right now, and some others didn't reply at all.
Respond. But still, you did get the attention. And the reason why I want to call this out and say kudos to you, and also use this opportunity to talk to trainees, you still got an answer from people. You got people's attention. At the time, you were an undergrad in India. It's not something that, people would know you, or and then you got people's attention from all over the world. And that is very important to call out because that's really amazing. And also the fact that you knew what you want, what you didn't want. It's a 7 or 8 or 10-year-old PhD, which I think is really phenomenal to start out with. What do you want? What does that look like to you? Then here's my other question. You mentioned immunology versus pharmacology. The 50 emails that you sent out, was there kind of a 50-50 immunology versus pharmacology, or how did you pick pharmacology versus
I'll pick,
immunology?
actually pick depending on the research of research people were doing. It didn't have to do with like either pharmacology or immunology. Like those were the two fields that I knew that something that really interests me, something that I got my eye in when I was doing my undergrad. But it mostly depend on like the research. And as an undergrad, my mental capacity to understand research was also very small. So, the things I understood and things that got me like, wow, this is amazing, and this is what I would like to do, or, so that's how I picked and I sent those emails.
That's awesome. And this is probably me not knowing. You mentioned you had to do a master's proposal project before you ended up in your PhD. So you had to do a full master's. Was that before you ended up in your PhD program?
So I did Master of Research, which is like sort of just the dissertation. Like, it was just doing research in one lab and writing a master's thesis by the end. So you have like, so it in Australia, in Australia, it's like 2 years program, but because I applied for PhD directly, so they were like, because I do not have any research experience during that time, so they're like, if you do Master of Research, which is like 1 year honors if you think about it, and then like a PhD followed by it, but during that 8 months you had to like get result, and then you had to write your thesis and do like a thesis defense sort of thing, and you need to get like I think 80 or more than 80 85 or something to do a PhD if you would want to in the same university or elsewhere in Australia.
Wow.
The first year of Master of Research is like rotation in different lab and coursework, which I sort of skipped because I directly got into second year, which is the whole research throughout the 8 or 9 months, and then a thesis.
Yeah. Wow. But still, I think it's awesome that, you know, you knew what you wanted, you kind of figured out how to get there, and then you just went ahead and did it. Obviously, it's not as simple as I'm saying it. It's never a walk in the park, but still.
No, it was not.
You know,
and you know, like moving from India to Australia was a cultural shock as well, because I felt like, I don't know, in India, I always had people to do things for me. But when I went outside, I was like, oh, I have to cook for myself and I don't know cooking. Oh, I have to do my laundry by myself. And I was like literally 22 years old that time. So I had no idea what I was doing with my life. And here my parents were like so scared, sending me so far from them. There was a lot going on. And then I think it was good because it would just keep me focused. And I knew that I had 8 months to do the research and to get the result and to write thesis.
Yeah.
So it would help me distract from not from being far away from the family, you know, somehow, because I had to be so focused, like getting results and like writing thesis, because that would allow me to do PhD.
Yeah.
You know?
And you also, you kind of also grew up, so you learn how to do laundry, how to cook, how to take care of yourself. And I think that must have been reassuring to your parents as well and to your family that, like, she's fine. She's just working. Which is a big deal when you think about it. And then how did you pick Mark's lab? Mark was on the podcast previously, and he's wonderful. I really, really enjoyed chatting with him. How was it like in the lab, and how, like, what did you learn during your time in your PhD there?
So we worked on cannabinoid receptor. So Mark's lab worked on many different receptors, including cannabinoid, opioid, and I think now I'm going to start working on serotonin receptor as well. But I worked specifically on cannabinoid receptor, and I looked at cannabinoid receptor from two different perspectives. So the first perspective was to look at the pharmacological profile of the synthetic cannabinoids, because synthetic cannabinoids are very different from the natural cannabis THC. And there were like a lot of synthetic cannabinoids on news during that time, as many people were dying from the abuse of this drug. And they were, of course, using it as recreation, like for recreational purpose. But the second part of my PhD/master's thesis was to look at the therapeutic effects of cannabidiol CBD at different molecular targets. So it was like looking at the pharmacology from these two different angles.
And I'm smiling because I do remember your slides. And one other thing is that when you were finishing up your PhD when you and I met, and you were looking for your postdoc, and I remember
for
your presentation. And I think, you know, the slides were amazing. The work was really amazing. And I'm going to stop there because I don't want to kind of spill the beans and ask you or tell the audience how you ended up from Australia, like from India to Australia that we know, but how did you end up from Australia to NIH and where you are today? And I guess that's my next question.
So I worked on cannabinoid receptors, and at that time, so what happened was, like, when I was doing my master's, I went to a conference in Melbourne. It's like Australian Society of Pharmacology, and when I got to know about GPCRs, it was through cannabinoid receptors. And at that time, I don't know, like, my mind was still like very much as like a young person in the field who did not know so much about the other GPCRs. So to go to that conference and see that there's so many different GPCRs and like people are doing so many different things and like how GPCRs can basically control everything that's happening in your body. And not only that, like the technology that we have, like people looking at the receptor signaling pathway from so many different angles, like they have like TruPath, which is like the dissociation or recruitment of G proteins to the membrane. Then there's beta arrestin, there's cyclic AMP. Like you could look at the opening of potassium channel, closing of calcium channel receptor. There's so much, right? And I did not know because I was like one receptor, two or three SAs, that's, you know. So I and two and that was the first time I met Arthur Christopoulos there. I didn't go and talk to him, but I observed everything around me and I just looked at him and I thought, I looked at his passion for science, for GPCR, and how confident he was. And I just thought, I would want to do PhD and I would want to be someone like, you know, I would like to be in the same path as he is. So that was a huge drive for me to go to PhD and like do PhD. Like I knew that I wanted to, but I needed a push. And I think that conference provided me that push. So I met him again. And this time during my PhD, again, I went to a conference in Melbourne. It was in 2018. And I made sure that this time I go and I talk to him. And I did. And he's like so nice. I don't know if many people know this, but he's also a musician. Like he has so many guitars. You should definitely get him on podcast. And I told him that you know, like you have been a huge drive for me to be in this field because I saw you and how you would like stand at the back and your questions and like your interest in the field, like your passion towards pharmacology in general was just amazing. You were saying something, Yamina?
Yeah, I was just gonna say, he does have an open invitation to the podcast. He's been so extremely busy, but I did reach out to him in 2020, and I did know that he's a musician because Roger Sunahara, who is also a musician and instrument maker, promised Arthur Christopoulos that he's gonna make him a guitar. This whole underground thing happening here, but I was just going to mention that I will be at the next GPCR, Great Lakes GPCR retreat, November 2nd to 4th. And that's the conference I was talking to you about before we hit record. And Arthur Christopoulos is the keynote speaker. And being one of the organizers of the meeting, the other organizers granted me to have a table with Dr. GPCR stuff around there. And I'm going to try and have impromptu, really quick conversations with the attendees, but also the speakers. I need to figure out how that looks like, but I'm definitely gonna you know, talk to Arthur, and I cannot wait to have him on. One interesting thing, and I don't think he remembers this, but when I was finishing up my PhD, and I was way less I want to say scientific about my next step regarding the postdoc. I remember that I emailed Arthur about doing a postdoc in his lab. At that time, I wanted to, you know, to move to Australia, and I thought, oh, who else do you want to work with other than Arthur? And then he responded, you know, we don't have space in our team right now. And I said, how about I would come with a scholarship? And he said, yeah, that'd be great. And that's pretty much where I left it because in the meantime, I got an invitation to give a talk in Tom Sackmar's lab, and I got, you know, a scholarship, and then ended up in New York, and I never followed up with Arthur. So I don't think he remembers this, but I do, and I do remember it. So maybe I'll bring it up with him and see what he remembers of it. I don't think it's much, but still, I can't wait to have him on. And it's interesting how, you know, these scientists, like the impact they have on us, you know, the next generation and the junior, more junior scientists, and they don't even know it sometimes. So I think it's really important to highlight the fact that, you know, sometimes you don't even know the impact you have until somebody comes to you 10 years later and say, well, actually that talk or that, you know, that question at that conference just, you know, turned on a light bulb there.
Definitely. So, yeah.
So is Please, go ahead.
So I think, yeah, circumference. And I visited another conference in the US, and I took that opportunity to visit a different cannabinoid lab. I'm not going to take name, because I went to that lab thinking that I may do a postdoc there. And then the another lab that I visited was Brian Kovilka's lab, just because I had the opportunity to visit his
Of
lab,
course.
right? And I was like, yes, I'm not gonna like let down that opportunity go anywhere,
Of course.
because they publish like the crystal structure of cannabinoid receptor with MDMA bufivinac and other G proteins, and I thought like with the synthetic cannabinoid and other G protein, I thought that was like a huge deal, and I just emailed him, and I got to visit his lab, which was very nice. But yes, so the other lab was where the lab that I was planning on doing my postdoc. COVID happened, and meanwhile, I had the opportunity to look at other postdocs opening, and then I came across Ross's lab, like the current lab I am in, Ross Chilohar's lab at NIH. And I just thought, okay, so I've always focused on cannabinoid receptor. This position would give me an opportunity to look at different GPCRs, because I think the plan was for him to work on different GPCRs. And also, it's going to be like multidisciplinary project. So I always looked at pharmacology, like, you know, you give me drugs, I'm going to test them, look at different signaling pathways. I don't know what's happening on the chemistry side. I was never interested, to be honest. But I was like, no, maybe I need to give myself a chance to like understand what's happening on the chemistry side. And a part of this was also because I was thinking, what if I have an independent lab in the future? Like, I need to understand things from all aspects of like a molecule, like the chemistry side, like the pharmacology side, a computational side, etc. And then I remember that I talked with you about that position, and then we did a practice talk for my postdoc, and I had an interview with Ross, and then I had another interview with Ross again and other people in the department, where I presented my PhD work, and yeah, and he offered me the job. And since then, like, this is my first postdoc, and I've been here like almost two, like I just completed 2 years, I think.
And I do remember that was the time when I interviewed Ross on the podcast, so you kind of knew who you were gonna talk to as well. And I mean, let's just say it on the record, Ross is amazing and is a really smart and a really amazing,
very supportive,
but a very supportive person as well. So, you know, always you know, really a pleasure to have interactions with him. I saw him in person, I think for the first time last year at the Discovery on Target meeting here in Boston. And it was so interesting because
He did mention that.
And it's crazy because since starting Dr. GPCR, I've like developed these relationships online with people, and I know them, and then when I get to meet them in person, I'm like, it's like I've known them forever. Which I think it's really it's really interesting. You and I have never met in person, but
I know I was going to say that,
but we've known each other for almost 3 years now.
I'm very hopeful that we would meet sometimes in the near future in person.
I hope so too. I hope so too. As we mentioned, I don't have plans to go visit NIH or the area, but who knows. Maybe a shout out to Ross to go for the lab to go to the GPCR retreat in November.
Right.
Ross, if you're listening, kind of subliminal message sending there. But yeah, it's just an amazing and you know, I remember you presented last year at the Dr. GPCR Summit with really, really amazing data. And I'm glad it's going well. How are you finding the change between, you know, going from India to Australia and then to the US post COVID, nonetheless?
US staying or living in US wasn't so difficult. I think because Maybe because, like, I think transition from India to Australia was much more difficult. I think maybe that time I was very young, had no idea what I was doing. But this time I feel more prepared because of my experiences, I feel like, because I've moved so much. Yeah, but also, I don't know, US sort of feels like India and feels like home. I don't know why, but it does. It gives that feeling. Yes, so far, moving is always difficult, especially when you're far away from your mom and dad, right?
Of
Like
course.
it's just difficult. Yeah, like things like today in the morning, somehow my mom's Wi-Fi was not working and I could not call her, and I freaked out, why is she not picking my phone? You know, small things like that. It really so. But I think then you have to look at the bigger picture and why you are here. And the main purpose is, like, for me to do science and, like, you know, because this is going to help my career. So yeah, it's fine. As you said, it's not walk in the park, you know.
It never is, but I think, and it's interesting you mentioned, you know, feeling at home in the US, and it's such an interesting feeling because you don't know if you're feeling at home or not until you actually lived someplace. And sometimes you're like, ugh, this doesn't feel like, it's fine, but it doesn't feel like home. And that's exactly how I feel about Boston and the Boston area. I do feel like I'm home. And I've lived, you know, in New York, in Maryland, and Massachusetts, and in the Boston area. And this is the place where I'm like, okay, I'm home. I like it. You know, it's, I don't know, it's an interesting feeling. It's maybe hard to put words on it, but you have to do it. You shouldn't inhibit yourself in general to move about, you know, when it comes to moving, because you don't know. And you're always gonna, you know, the Shivani in India is not the same Shivani who lived in Australia, and the Shivani who lives in Maryland right now and works at NIH is the accumulation of all those experiences, and you're just richer from there. All right, so
But I guess
question.
sometimes you have to prioritize your family and stuff, and then I don't know, like, you I think it's not feasible to move all the time, right? Some point you have to be like, no, I want some stability in life. I think I'm reaching that stage. I don't know. I don't know if it's too early, but I feel like I am
You're
reaching that
ready.
stage. Like, I'm like, I don't want to move so much. Like, I just wanna, you know?
Get established and then, you know, put down. I totally understand it. And, you know, I moved with family through these different stages, but still, it's hard to move. Hard to move if you're looking for two jobs. It's hard to move if you have children, or, you know, and then leave, because you develop relationships where you live, and then you just have to uproot the whole thing and move. But at the same time, you shouldn't ignore the feeling of, do you feel at home? You and does your family feel at home in that particular geographical spot? But anyway,
Agreed.
my next question, which is the question that I ask everyone. You mentioned working on cannabinoids. What is your favorite GPCR?
I would say cannabinoids because that's how I got to know GPCRs. That was like my opening for GPCR, you know, in the GPCR field. So cannabinoid receptors, definitely. But I also have a thing for all the receptors in the brain. Like, in general, I just find it amusing. Like opioid receptor, like the biosignaling stuff. I know, like, there are papers that shows that probably the, you know, the analgesic effect through GI and the adverse effects through Ariston is not true. I find all of those things so amusing. All of the great work coming from Brian Roth's lab, serotonin receptor, muscarinic receptor, Andrew Tobin, like, you know, Ariston's in general, how they work from Arun Shukla's lab. I read all those different paper and I'm like, wow. So I don't know. I'm like, it's hard to pick, but if I have to generalize, I would say
TB1.
the receptors in the brain.
Yeah, I think it makes total sense. And I think you're the first guest on the podcast who has a preference for GPCRs expressed in like a in an organ. We've had
Okay.
phosphorylation sites, and that was enterotobin. We've had G proteins, we've had arrestins, we've had other partners, we've had different GPCRs. But I think you're the first one who
Yeah.
says, GPCRs in the brain, which is an absolutely valid
Okay.
answer. We
Yeah.
won't judge you on that. And I think it's really amazing because the brain is such a complex space. And,
Yeah.
it's I just find it fascinating that it does all these things. And some of these things you don't even think about and they happen.
Right.
Others you have to work on it on a regular basis so that you can form those networks and then you can become good at something.
Our body's so weird. Sometimes it amazes me, like how one mutation could make such a huge difference. Like one mutation in GPCR or something, or in the ion channel, could completely change how ligand interacts with the receptor, right? And there's 800 GPCRs and like so many mutations. It blows my mind. Sometimes I think about it.
No, agreed. And at our last, we were talking about what GPCRs. I'm thinking here, adhesion GPCRs or factory GPCRs, orphan GPCRs. And I'm like, wait a minute, that's just a subpopulation of everything and everybody in there.
Right.
No, I think it's really great. And right now you mentioned, not working on cannabinoid receptors. Can you tell us a little bit about what kind of work you're doing in the lab?
I would like to work on cannabinoid receptors, though I'm slightly like I'm already putting my words into roses. I'm like I would want to. So we are working on. So I'm currently working on parathyroid hormone type 1 receptor. I'm working on glucagon-like type 1 receptor, GLP 1 receptor. I'm working on opioid receptor. Working on muscarinic receptor, like a little bit, just started on that project. And I'm working on adenosine receptor. So
Okay,
these
so
are the five
yeah, you're
receptors that I'm
getting to the
currently working
brain.
on.
I can see the
You
path.
can see that. Yeah, so with parathyroid hormone type 1 receptor or PTHR1 receptor. So we have a nanobody that binds to the extracellular domain of the receptor, and then we conjugate a ligand using click chemistry tool. So it's like you preserve the pharmacophore group, which is like PTH1 to 11, and we replace the PTH1 to PTH12 to 34 portion with the nanobody. So you are changing, like increasing or modulating the affinity to the extracellular domain of the receptor, and we want to see how that affinity would change the signaling dynamics of the receptor, and how it would affect the downstream signaling pathway. So that's what we are doing. Yeah, I've got some interesting result, yeah, I'm currently writing the paper, which is difficult because I'm not someone who can like do the lab work and write at the same time. I just cannot. Like, I have to switch everything off and then be like, okay, lock myself in the room and then write. That's how I write.
I am
Yeah.
that way as well. I mean, and writing my thesis was like pulling teeth because I needed to finish some stuff and then I had to write and I said, no, I can't do this. And I can't write in the lab. There's no way.
I know. I'm so glad that we are on the same page because I felt like I'm alone here who just
No,
can't do this.
I
Okay,
can't. I
so good to
can't.
know.
You can't, I mean, I can't. I need to like have a special like mental space I go to do the writing. By the way, I hate
Agreed.
writing. I have such a hard time writing because sometimes I'm like, yeah, I know what I want to say. I just don't know how to say it properly or how to say it in a nice way. And I think the other problem is that sometimes my brain is faster than my fingers. So like the thought is there and then my fingers are like stuck with the beginning of the sentence. But yeah, it's such a pain. It's such a painful thing to do. So kudos to all of those who can write in the lab. I don't think there's a lot of us. But doing lab work and writing at the same time, that's just no, I mean, we'd have to clone each other like ourselves and then have one Shivani or one Yamina do the
Right.
lab work and the other one do the
Another
writing.
one, right? I know.
No, totally. All right. I'm looking at our episode outline, and I think by now everybody knows that the questions are pretty much optional, but it allows us to keep us in into that same into the same thing. Top three aha moments that you had as a scientist that shaped your trajectory.
Wow, that's difficult. I think I have a moment every day. That's how I feel.
That's fine. That's great. Okay, top three aha moments of the day.
I mean, like, I feel like they're like those non-aha moments that makes aha moments so much special. Like,
Yeah.
having a paper rejection and then like having that paper accepted in the same journal or another journal is what makes everything special. That's how I feel. So you asked top three aha moment, just getting done things from my to-do list and just like,
Yeah.
crossing it over, like that's just beautiful part of the day. And I still haven't, and I'm going to do this. I'm going to do
Yeah.
some cell culture work after this
Yeah.
podcast. Yeah, but top three, I think one would be the conference part that I shared when I went to, and I was like, wow, blown away by all the research happening around. The second would be, I think when my first paper, first author paper of PhD got rejected. That's the non-aha moment. And I was like,
Okay.
that was my first paper, and I was like crying like a baby. I
That's
was taking
such.
it too personally, but then someone told me you should not take it personally. And I was like, okay, now I have to stop crying and not take it personally and just look at how can I make this paper better.
Yeah.
And I did, and then resubmitted in British Journal of Pharmacology, and it got accepted. So that was like when it got accepted, well, that was like an aha moment, definitely.
Yeah.
I think third aha moment would be when I got into Ross's lab and I started doing, I'm still learning some chemistry, and I did like my first salt tagging reaction or first click chemistry reaction or first purification of nanobody, and I'm like, wow, like this is so cool. And I could do this and I understand chemistry. Oh my God, this is and that was like, wow. Like just to be able to learn something new every day. Like,
Yeah.
that was another aha moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I as I said, I get aha moment every day. I feel like it's hard to say.
And I think it's about putting yourself in situations where you get to learn new things. And the fact that you identify that, yes, there is, you love cannabinoid receptors, but there is a whole world of other GPCRs out there and tools and techniques and methods and approaching the questions from a different perspective. I think that's very aha as well to
Yeah,
get you
definitely.
to learn these things because no idea how to purify nanobodies or how you make them
Yeah.
until you make them and you're like, oh, that's it. Okay. Now I know
Right.
how to do this, right? But
Yeah.
before you actually
Yeah.
do it, you don't know.
Yeah. But I would also say that there were a lot of non-aha moments as well, like throughout
Of
the
course.
career,
Of
Yeah.
course.
And but I feel like GPCR community is like, it's so supportive.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that you came up with this Dr. GPCR
Thank
to
you.
bring everyone in under the same roof. I think that's very beautiful. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. And this is only the beginning. I have as it's similar to what I was mentioning about my brain being over there and me just writing. There's so much more in the bank of ideas that I want to bring or we want to bring into the community. And I'm hoping, in the next year or two, we're going to get to that place where everything is going to happen within the ecosystem. People can talk. I really want to have a place to kind of bring to life the Journal of Negative Results or some variation of that, because the
Right.
non-aha moments that you mentioned are so critical to advance the field.
Oh, 100%. Negative results are so important. I think that's something Mark taught me while I was doing my PhD. So I had like two set of negative results that we actually end up publishing. It didn't go into like a very high impact journal,
Yeah.
but it did go into I think, was it like pharmacology research and perspective? It's like a new
Yeah.
sister journal of British Journal of Pharmacology. So I think we published there, maybe. Yeah. So, but I think he told me, I was like, it's negative. Like, who would, like, what, like, you know, it's not interesting. And
Yeah.
then he said, no, it's important. It's important for other labs to know, because there are many times what happened, different labs are like reproducing same result, and it's good for them to know so that they know that we have done this and we got like similar result, or they will not spend their time doing something we did because they know that, you
Exactly.
know, these results
Yeah.
are negative. So I so agree with you.
It's
Yeah.
so important to report these and to track these and to make these searchable and findable as well. I don't think it's a real world for the findable world, but I think it's important to get there because, as you mentioned, I've heard so many horror stories of somebody starting a PhD or a postdoc, and then a year later somebody would tell them, "Oh yeah, 10 people tried this, it doesn't work." And he was not reported anywhere. So I think being able to capture one of those, and this is only one part of the ecosystem that
Absolutely.
would like to bring to life, but also the other one is formerly known as the Learning Center, which we've rebaptized the Dr. GPCR University, where we want to have this knowledge database where you can take a course about, you know, plate chemistry, purifying nanobodies, or computation, how to use computational methods to study GPCRs, how to write a grant,
Yeah.
how to write a
I think
grant,
that
which
would
is
be amazing.
a painful thing. And you know who's really good at this?
You're
Kathleen
making our
Caron.
life easier,
That's the whole point. That's the whole
Yamina.
point.
Yeah.
But Kathleen Caron is really great at writing grants. She loves writing grants, which is really interesting. She does not love writing papers because that's done. You know, they know what the result
Yeah.
is. But I'm gonna reach out to her and to others as well, to see if anyone wants to collaborate, because I think it's important to have our own
I personally would
knowledge
love to
base.
attend a course on this, on how to write a research grant. NIH does have it, but like during my entire PhD, maybe there was a workshop, maybe not, but how can, like, you would think that it could be part of like the course during undergrad or like during master's or during PhD? I think there was, but there was only a little bit about it. But when you start writing, it's like a whole different world and how you were not exposed to it. Like, you know, you think about it. Yeah,
And
so
that
I'm glad
changes
that you have
with,
this idea.
yeah, we're working on it, just bear with us. But and it also changes from country to country. So, you know, writing a grant in the US is different from writing a grant in Europe, is different from writing a grant in Australia. And these are just a few examples. So really having this collection of anything GPCR related that you can think of, you can find in the university. And I think that's the whole point of us bringing the community together and having these tools, but also
Definitely.
these opportunities to interact.
I remember when we started, when you started Dr. GPCR and I joined in, you had like so many ideas. And every day I remember you'll come up with new ideas. And I was like, wow, where do you come up with so many ideas from?
It's,
Yeah.
I think most of the time it's out of a need that I felt during my training. You know, during my master's, my PhD, my postdoc. For my postdoc, my CXCR3 related paper, I mean, that was such a difficult thing to do because I was trying to look for hex cells that didn't have background expression of my receptor. And they were all hex cells, HEK293, HEK293T, HEK293E. And it was just, and then yeah, I had to do, you know, RT-PCRs to figure out which variant is expressed, which, and it was such a painful thing. And it would have been so nice to have a database or you have something that's very well characterized and identified. And you're like, okay, this is the information. It would have saved me half the time I spent doing this.
Yeah.
You know?
Definitely. It reminds me of GPCRDB, right?
Something like that, exactly. Something like that. But in an ideal world, I'd like it to be like more from the university's perspective, something more interactive, where you can talk to the scientists, where you can take the course with many people, and then people have a
Yeah.
group where they're like, okay, how did you do this? Have you tried this? And have a conversation. And it's all about the community. And as you mentioned and said so nicely,
That would be so impactful.
And we have a great GPCR community. Most like 99.99999, if not 100% of the people in the GPCR community are amazing. They like to help each other. They're wonderful. And it's such a great place to be in, scientifically speaking.
Yeah, no, definitely. I agree. Yeah.
So all right.
Supportive.
Last question. Actually, I have two more. I know we're almost at the top of the hour. Last one before the last one. Any advice for young scientists who want to contribute to the field?
I think finding a mentor, because I felt like throughout my research career journey, having mentors and figuring out what I want to do was very helpful. Like, I remember I discussed things with you as well, right? And I was just telling you I want to discuss more things going forward. So I think having mentors is so important, because that has personally helped me. Now the question is, like, how to find them? I think you would, like, in your, like, throughout your career, like, I think you meet people and you know. For me, I had like an industry mentor while I was doing my PhD through like a industry mentorship program in Australia. So that's how I found like an industry mentor, and from him I get to know like the different positions in like research positions in industry and like things beyond academia, you know. And then I started, like, I worked with you like on Dr. GPCR. So we talked about so many different things and I learned so many things from you. And then after Dr. GPCR, I started working as an editorial intern in British Journal of Pharmacology. And I worked closely with the past editor-in-chief, Amrita Ahluwalia. Learned so much from her. Like, now, like, she, like, the there's, like, she left because there's new, her tenure was over. There's, like, new editor-in-chief. But I still like to get in touch with her. And I'm like, can we meet, like, once in a month? That's fine for me. I don't know. I feel like I always have like a need to discuss. It's research, it's career or something. I just feel like the need to have them with me. I don't know why, but it just helps. That's how I feel. And it really helps you guide and see things clearly. That's how I feel. Yeah.
I think that's very important. And before I add a comment, was that the job that you were applying to? I remember reviewing something like kind of a statement of interest for something in 2021, I believe.
Maybe.
But I'm glad you got it.
Maybe it was. Yeah.
It was some kind of an editorial type of job. Yeah.
Yeah. And now they made me editor of the journal because they wanted early career researchers to start on this position as an editorial intern. And the plan was to push them to become an editor in the journal.
Nice.
So, yeah, but I've learned so much. Like, this is what I'm telling, through these different programs, like with Dr. GPCR, with the journal, like with my industry mentorship program, and through my PIs as well. Like, I've learned so much. And I want to keep them close, you know. That's how I feel. Like,
I learned so much from everyone I talk to on the podcast and everyone I interact with. And, you know, I think you made a great point about being open and building relationships and talking to people and learning from them. And that's very important. I would have never developed the way I developed my network and like my eyes open if I hadn't started the podcast and I haven't started talking to people. If I stayed working in the lab pipetting, we wouldn't be here today.
You know? Right. We won't.
Definitely.
Yeah, but I still, like, it's still frightening a little bit whenever I go to conference and I'm like, I know that, like, I look at the schedule and I know that I'll highlight the people that I really want to go and talk to.
Yeah.
But there is like an eek inside me, which is like, is this a good time to go? Like, you know, shall I go like that? But once you like go through that thing, like, you know, you start talking to them, and you just have to get yourself out of that uncomfortable zone. And once you step out, they're so welcoming. That's how I felt.
I feel the same. And even now I feel that, I know the person, but I have to go talk to. Well, it's not that I have to. I want to go talk to them. But then the questions I have in my head is like, what are we going to talk about? You know, and then why, like in my, especially when I started Dr. GPCR and as a trainee as well, I was like, who am I to go talk to XYZ who has X number of years, you know, producing cool data and really great research in science? And I think that's a misconception that people don't want to talk to you. Just going and introducing yourself and saying, hey, I really liked your talk, or I really like this, or just having a conversation, they don't bite. They do not bite. People have to brush their teeth no matter who they are. So it doesn't matter right. who you are and how many years you've been working in the field, you still have to eat, sleep, and brush your teeth. And that makes us all human. All right. Shivani, thank you so much. Actually, I did have one last question if we have one more minute. You were mentioning mentors. What's next for you? Or do you know what's next for you after your postdoc?
Wow.
There is no wrong answer there. You can see, Yamina, that's exactly
no
what
wrong answer.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about that.
I did wanted to talk to you about that. I know that I would want a position that I know that I don't want to move a lot. So I'm looking for something that could be more stable. And also look, I always had this dream of having my independent research career. So we will see how things goes. But I feel like I'm gonna do my I'm gonna finish my postdoc. But I think we have a lot to think about. There's just a lot to think about. A lot on my mind.
But then again, I think you're in a phase where you're starting to plan that, and I think that's a completely valid answer, because it thinks it's not a walk in the park. I don't know why I have this sentence in my head. It's not a walk in the park. It's all about planning and then taking whatever comes and then making the best of out of the situation. So, and I are going to catch up on about that. And then anyone listening, next time I'll have Shivani on the podcast. She'll tell us all about her next steps.
Okay. I will. Yeah.
All right. Definitely. Super. Thank you so much for your time. I'm going to stop recording. Don't go anywhere. And we're going to let people wonder what we talk about after we stop recording. Thank you, Shivani.
Thank you, Yamina. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us and listening to this Dr. GPCR podcast episode. We thank our guest, our Dr. GPCR team members, Attila, Ines, Montserrat, Ivana, Andreina, Valint. Please subscribe to the Dr. GPCR newsletter, find us on YouTube, and if you like our podcast, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. You can also leave us a testimonial at drgpcr.com/testimonials. Join us and sign up for the Dr. GPCR University course starting February 8th with Dr. Terry Kinnakin. The deadline for registration is February 1st, 2024. When you register to the course, you will get a 1-year complimentary access to the Dr. GPCR premium membership. I hope you can join us. Another great way to support us is to share your favorite Dr. GPCR program with your network and colleagues. Email us with any questions or suggestions at hello@drgpcr.com. Until next time, stay safe.